And the thing is, after all these years, I still look back with wonder.
Hey there, Wonderlings. Long time no podcast. This is your host, Angela Bowen, the host of Looking Back on My Wonder Years, a Wonder Years podcast. How's everyone been? I've been doing good. I believe the last time I spoke to you all was September 5th, the back-to-school episode, that's right. So what I've been doing in my time off is just getting ahead on podcasts, taking some time for myself, going out on walks, and I got to see the new It movie, which was awesome. I feel it's even better than the original TV movie from 1990. 2 weeks ago, I got to go to a author signing to see young adult author Sarah J. Maas. She writes fantasy fiction. She wrote the Throne of Glass series and currently is working on the Court of Thorns and Roses series. And she released a book, A Tower of Dawn, which is part of the Throne of Glass series as well. And then she's got one more book in the final Throne of Glass series, and then she's done with that. And let's see what else. Oh, yesterday I went to see another YA fantasy adult author, young adult author, Leigh Bardugo. She wrote the Grisha trilogy, Shadow and Bone, and also the Six of Crows duology. And she also has a new short story book, Language of Thorns, which I haven't read. Actually, to be honest, I haven't read any of her books yet, but she's an amazing author. From what I've heard, I really look forward to reading her books. That's pretty much it. You know, the event started at like 4 in the afternoon, and I got there like around 10:30 or so, so I had a while to wait. So I'm like, well, Schuler's Books has free Wi-Fi, so I'm like, you know what? I'm going to catch up again on rewatch Stranger Things, so I'm all ready to go for season 2 in October of this month, the 27th. I also watched season 3 Fuller House, so I'm caught up with that and just waiting for the second half of season 3. I think that's going to drop in December, so if any of you haven't gotten into Fuller House and you love Full House, I definitely recommend it. I really, really like it. It's really fun to see all these characters come back. So without further ado, how about we get on with the show? Today, I will be discussing two episodes, Season 3, Episode 3, Wayne on Wheels, and Season 3, Episode 4, Mom Wars. Season 3, Episode 3, Wayne on Wheels, aired on October 24th, 1989, and in this episode, Wayne finally gets his driver's license, but it doesn't sit well with his new job of being a chauffeur to driving Kevin around. Like, oh no, older brother gets a license, he's got to help out mom and dad by driving his younger siblings around. I didn't have that problem. I was the one being driven around. So my older sister wasn't a fan of that. So, all right, we begin the episode with a child's drawing as older Kevin narrates how he used to live in a great big house with a great big yard and a great big bedroom and also a great big older brother. All the while this is going on, we hear the Pop Goes the Weasel music, and the drawing shows us a house with a boy, supposedly Kevin, and a creepy older boy drawn with an evil face. That music just makes it creepy. If somebody who'd never seen this show before and watched this opening, they probably think they were watching a TV movie about child abuse. We move on to an outside shot of the house as Kevin tells us by the middle of 1969, the house, the yard, and the bedroom were becoming very small. Kevin mentions that maybe it's because he and Wayne are getting bigger. Lucky for me, I didn't have to share a bathroom with an older sibling too much because when I became a teenager, my sister had already moved out by the time I was 11. We then see Kevin sitting on the couch next to Wayne and Dolores, who are making out. That has got to be all kinds of awkward. I'd be like, you know, take that crap someplace else, please. In the bathroom, the boys struggle to get space at the bathroom counter as Wayne pushes Kevin out of the way to pick at his face in the mirror. Papa's it, basically. Kevin, grossed out, slowly backs out the door like, I'm getting the hell out of here now. The next day, Kevin and Paul are playing with a frisbee on the front lawn when they see Wayne learning how to drive with Jack riding shotgun next to him. I bet Jack wishes that his side had a brake like the Cars and Drivers training do. Kevin and Paul watch in horror as Wayne comes out of nowhere like a bat out of hell into the driveway and slams on the brake. Jack grips the window divider and yells, "Damn it, Wayne!" Yeah, Wayne, let's not put your father's head through the windshield, because as we can see, there are no seatbelts invented yet. Wayne just feigns innocence like, I was all right, or whatever the heck he said. Basically, he's like, I had my blinker on. Well, really, yeah, but that doesn't mean, he's a terrible driver. I remember when I got my license, everyone's like, oh, stay off the roads, like, I'm not a terrible driver. Come on now. I'm not that bad. I'm not bad. Paul looks at Kevin and says, I can't believe this. Wayne is driving? Kevin tells him, yeah, Wayne got his learner's permit yesterday. I remember when I had to do my driver's training and had to log my hours. I'm sure a lot of kids out there flubbed their hours too. I know I'm not the only one, especially my nighttime driving, because I didn't get a lot of that. I took my driver's education during the summer after my freshman year in 1998. The week we got out of school, I was back at school for driver's training the following Monday. It's like, didn't I just leave here? My cousin, who's 5 months younger than me, was also in my class, but because he had helped on the farm, he had learned to drive early, like probably around like age 10 or something like that. I guess I needed a little more help, being I hadn't really had any practice driving before taking the class. My grandma said that they would, she told the instructor that they'd work with me on driving, so they allowed me to move on to segment two, which was later held in November. That summer, I had learned how to drive on the expressway, or I practiced once, and I couldn't handle it, so for 12 years after that, I avoided the expressway like the plague until one day I had no choice but to take it. After that, I got over my fear. So that summer of 1998, I logged my driving hours with my dad. I had to drive like 40 hours of daytime driving and have 10 hours of nighttime driving. I think, yeah, I mainly fudged my nighttime driving because I wasn't doing much of it. And I remember my dad kind of looking at my log sheet and he was getting angry like, you know, no one is going to believe you drove all these times. So as I was making up, you know, dates and times, like, hey, I drove on this date at this time until this time. I told him basically, you know, everyone else is doing it. So he basically let the issue drop. Jack tells Wayne, all right, take it slower this time. And Wayne backs out of the driveway, not bothering to look if someone else was coming behind him. What the hell? Someone could have been zooming down their street doing 50 miles per hour and he would have backed the hell into them. Paul states how Wayne's a menace being behind the wheel. Kevin thinks to himself, what with Wayne having his license, that basically means Wayne out of the house and Wayne out of my life. He smiles at this, like, yes, get him out. I want my freedom. I want my freedom of Wayne. I mean, he's got to share a room with him, a bathroom, a house. Oh, my gosh. Yeek. That's too much Wayne for anybody. The next day, Kevin is in the kitchen as Dolores is helping Wayne study for his driving test. She asks the question, what do you do when a traffic light is out? And he chooses the correct answer, C, which is you treat the intersection like a four-way stop. She rewards him with a kiss, and Kevin silently cheers for him, pumping his fist up and down in celebration. She asks the next question, which is what is the speed limit in a school zone? A, 5 miles per hour. B, B, 15 miles per hour, or C, 20 miles per hour. He thinks on it longer than he should, and she chastises him, telling him, it's B, Wayne. She's like, you better study harder, because if you don't pass this test, Sorry, guys. So if he doesn't pass the test, he doesn't get to be with her. So what, the prize is her vagina? Is she going to give herself up for him? Unless she already has. Nah, I don't think she has. I mean, it's Wayne. Come on. The girl who plays Dolores, we see her in the season 3 premiere, Summer Song. And I don't believe she has any lines in that episode other than, like, waving bye to him. Wayne decides she's worth it, and he picks up the booklet, determined to study. That Saturday, we see Kevin and Paul walking the mall. I take it this is the shopping center that replaced Harper's Woods? I mean, since it's not within walking distance. Maybe it isn't, because Harper's Woods, he said it was like 10 minutes by foot or something. Kevin mentions the virtues of the mall. Pizza, movies, and girls. Exotic girls. Girls from other schools. Kevin and Paul are in the shoe store as Kevin checks out a couple of girls passing by and Paul is looking at some hideous, hideous black boots. Boy, some pair, huh? Paul says, examining the boots. Kevin's mind still on the girl says, huh? And Kevin's got this smile on his face the whole time. He's supposed to be surprised and confused by Paul's comment. Like, what? What'd you say? Paul asks Kevin what he thinks of the shoes. Kevin complains that they've wasted an entire Saturday looking at shoes. Paul picks up a tan leather shoe and says, well, I could play it safe with these. Then he asks Kevin's honest opinion on the shiny black pair. I gotta be honest, I think they're looking at girls' shoes or women's shoes. Those shoes Paul likes don't even look like something a guy would wear even in the 70s or even in the 60s or any other decade. They have too high of a heel on him, and I don't know. Kevin blows a raspberry while giving him the thumbs down sign. Paul looks shocked and tells him how some guy in their school wore them last week, and Paul thought that they looked nice. I mean, if you wear pants, you can't really see how high they go up. But even still, I say they're in the women's department because there's slip-on shoes and purses on the wall behind Kevin's head. Kevin stares out the window, and that's when he sees this blonde goddess who looks like Melissa Sue Anderson, who played Mary Ingalls on Little House on the Prairie. Even though, yeah, it's not her. The girl looks like Mary Ingalls, Melissa Sue Anderson from, like, seasons 3 and 4, when her hair was, like, California beach blonde. She smiles at him through the department store window and walks away. That's when Kevin races after his dream girl, and Paul chases after him to catch up. So now we're treated to Kevin running to find this girl, and he pushes a baby carriage out of the way. Then he steps on a lady's bag. Good thing this place doesn't have a mall cop, or he would have taken Kevin down. Kevin always does this when he's angry. He pushes people aside, and here, when he needs to find someone fast, he pushes babies out of the way and stepping on people's purchases. This kid ain't got no respect for anyone or anything when he's chasing down a girl. And to be quite frank, no matter how cute she is, no girl is worth trampling people over, Kevin. He ends up losing her, and Paul finally catches up to him and tells him, we'll get him next weekend. And Kevin gives him a sideways look like, what the hell are you talking about? The boot, he clarifies, is, we'll get him next weekend. I'd be like, I don't care about your boots. They were ugly anyway. In the kitchen, we see Wayne staring at an envelope with his name on it, and he opens it to reveal his newly minted driver's license. When Wayne pulls out his new license, he's so shocked and happy. I mean, did he not know he was going to get it, or if he passed his driver's test, or is it the shock of officially being a licensed driver? I mean, if he felt the envelope, he'd have felt the hard plastic in there. He shouts excitedly, and Kevin joins in, congratulating him. Now, when I went and got my license, I basically had, of course, had to wait for it in the mail and everything like that. But when I went in there and everything with my dad, the lady had said that she was talking straight to my dad, like, if she messes up at all, like, it's basically a temporary license. Like, if she messes up at all, you can bump her back down to a level one where I'd have all these restrictions. It's like, you don't even know me, lady, and already you're throwing judgment on me because I'm a teenage driver? But I did get to go out for lunch in celebration. You know, two people took me out to lunch in celebration of getting my license, so that was pretty awesome. Norma enters the kitchen and then is bombarded by Kevin and Wayne shouting their demands. Kevin tells her, it's Saturday and you promised to take me to the mall. And Wayne says, you said when I got my license I could have the car. She tells him, well, I have to take their... She has to take their dad's suits to the cleaners. So she tells Wayne to drop Kevin off at the mall and then he can have the car. Sounds like a simple solution to me, but Wayne complains to Norma how it's way out of my way. How the hell far is this mall? 30 miles? Wayne, stop being a jerk and just take him to the damn mall. Wayne must have picked up Dolores first because she's there when he drops Kevin and Paul off at the mall. Wayne tells them to get out, and Kevin and Paul look out the window and see the mall, which, like, looks like it's a half a mile away. So I want to play this clip of the exchange between Kevin and Wayne because it's hilarious. I'll be right back.
Okay, butthead's out.
Here?
Hey, Mom said the mall. I mean, technically, this is the mall.
Come on, Kev, let's just go.
Hey! Be on the curve at 6:30 or spend the night. Have fun shopping, girls.
So as I said, Wayne must have picked up Dolores first because she's there when he drops Kevin and Paul off at the Stonewood Mall. Wayne tells them to get out, and Kevin and Paul look out the window and see the mall, which looks half a mile away. Like I said, crazy. I'm trying to get back in this podcasting thing. Excuse me. Kevin and Paul exit the car, and Wayne tells them to be on the curb at 6:30 or spend the night. Then he's like, have fun shopping, girls, he mocks, then laughs and zooms out of there. Well, at least he didn't run over any pedestrians. Paul mentions to Kevin not to let Wayne get to him, suggests they get some pizza. Ah, pizza, the cure for anything. That and ice cream. The boys are sitting there, and Paul's chomping down on pizza, and he points to some random girl asking, is that her? Multiple times until Kevin tells him, look, Paul, I'll know her when I see her, okay? And then Paul points again, and Kevin goes to yell at him, but when he looks, it is the girl from last Saturday. Kevin mentions prior to this that they had been around the mall 7 times in 3 hours. Damn, that is a lot of wasted time. Who am I kidding? I'll spend longer than that in a bookstore. Kevin spots his dream girl at the movie ticket window. Then she and her friend disappear inside. Kevin buys a ticket for Romeo and Juliet. Only $1 for a ticket? Sure beats a $9 matinee price you pay in 2017. Back when I was a teenager, movies were like $3.50. Back in, like, say, 1998-99. Or if you went to the cheap theater for the second row movies, they were like $1.99. Those were the ones that my grandma took me to back in the early to mid-90s. I remember seeing Free Willy or Dennis the Menace in one of the cheap theaters. And then afterwards, we'd stopped into like a store. I think it was like... when they had the Montgomery Ward store, the mall there on Plainfield and Grand Rapids, and I saw the movie was already on VHS for sale. And I'm like, oh my gosh, how is this possible? This movie, I just saw it today in the theater, and it's already here on VHS. Paul asks Kevin what he's doing, and he tells him, I'm going to see a movie. And Paul's like, I am not seeing Romeo and Juliet. But in support of his friend, he does buy himself a ticket and follows him inside. Inside the dark theater, there's an usher by the door. I don't think there are ushers standing in the movie theater for the whole show. Paul ends up tripping as he's walking down the aisle and the kids actually shush him. Come on, no teens care about this movie. I mean, it's not the Leonardo DiCaprio and Claire Danes one. from 96, so come on. But then again, how many teen movies were there available back in 69? Probably not many. So you watch what was out there. I mean, what teen-friendly movie would have been out at the time? Kevin and Paul find seats far enough away from the blonde girl and her friend that they don't look like stalkers, but close enough that Kevin can tell that she has strawberry-scented hair. She's across the aisle and six rows ahead of him. That must be some strong-smelling shampoo. At first, Kevin just sits there thinking of his dream girl with a smile on his face, but then, as the movie wears on, he's using his hand to hold up his head in boredom. Once the credits begin to roll, he hears other girls behind him sniffling and have this look. He's got this look like, give me a break. Then he turns to Paul, and we see Paul blowing his nose in what looks like a hanky. Paul looks at Kevin, feeling the need to explain. He's like, oh, allergies. Like, yeah, whatever. Kevin and he walk out of the theater, and Paul complains how they could waste time spending hours just following this girl around, and tells Kevin, look, just go talk to her. We can just go home. Then he spots the girl, and she smiles at him as he slowly makes his way over nervously, in his head reciting a line from Romeo and Juliet. Right when he gets to her and manages to say hi, that's when Wayne pulls up and embarrasses him in front of this girl. Wayne jokes, asking Kevin if this is girl's new girlfriend. This girl is trying really hard not to laugh and look embarrassed. He continues to goad him, asking if he's getting a little smoocheroo at the movies. If I were him, I'd be like, well, I was hoping to, but since you cock-blocked me, then I guess not. Even Dolores is getting a kick out of Wayne just being a real dick to his brother. I gotta play this clip because this is freaking funny as hell. I'll be right back.
Well, well, well. What do we have here? A new girlfriend, perhaps? Getting a little smoocheroo with the movies, baby brother.
There was only one thing to do.
Bye. Bye.
Salvage what I could of my dignity.
Oops.
Wayne! Wayne, don't do this to me.
Do what? I'm just having a little trouble here with the brakes, that's all. I swear, I won't do it this time. Okay, I swear I won't do it. Just get in.
Wait.
Really, come on. I gotta get home.
So Kevin tells her a quick goodbye, and Paul, who is chatting up the frizzy-haired, bespectacled redhead, does the same. Kevin goes up to the car to get in, but Wayne pulls forward. Then this continues to go on for a bit, where Kevin is getting pissed, and Wayne feigns innocence, like, oh, it wasn't me. No, just trouble with the brakes. I gotta get home. Come on, get in. Wayne's not even looking forward when he pulls forward. People could be crossing in front of him. That is so fucking stupid. I'd be calling the cops on his ass for reckless driving. All he needs is to hit one damn person, and he won't be driving for a long time, if ever again. All this time this is going on, I'm wondering, where is Paul? He's not in the car. I wonder if he just called his parents to come and get him. Poor Kevin has to chase his brother around the fucking parking lot. Now we're in the kitchen, and we see Jack at the table holding the car keys, glaring at Wayne. Excuse me. Wayne throws the blame onto Kevin, saying, well, I tried to stop, but Kevin wouldn't get in. Luckily, both Jack and Norma don't buy Wayne's act. She tells Wayne, we're very disappointed in you. A car is not a toy. That's right. A car can be a deadly weapon that you can kill people with it if you're not careful. And he was not being careful at all. She also reminds him that the privilege of driving is not something to be taken lightly. I like that Norma is taking control here and reprimanding Wayne. Wayne, in frustration, yells, what is the point of having a license if all I have to do is drive Kevin around? Now Jack hasn't said anything up until this point, just sits there and grinds his teeth in anger, like he's trying not to reach across the table and beat his son. But at hearing this, he slams his coffee cup down. Jack tells Wayne, no more driving. Privilege is suspended indefinitely. Kevin relishes in this, which I would too. He has trouble hiding his glee that night in the bathroom while they're brushing their teeth. Though Wayne catches him smirking in the mirror. Wayne, you brought this shit on yourself, bud. Kevin looks out the window the next day to see Wayne riding around on his bike, then witnesses Dolores, who apparently found a new set of wheels when a car rolls up and she's in the back seat with some girls. Wayne chats her up, but she's not interested as the car speeds off. During lunch the next day at school, Paul gives Kevin some news. He found out about the girl Kevin was drooling over at the movies. Turns out, Paul went back to see Romeo and Juliet again, only this time he took Carla. And he spotted the girl with the glasses, who was with the girl last time. And he talked with her and found out that the girl, Dream Girl, is going to be at the movies again. And she also thinks Kevin's kind of cute. Well, who could blame her? I mean, those brown eyes, forget about it. Kevin comes in to the house and calls out, hey, Mom, I need a ride to the... Oh, shit. And that's when he witnesses the horror as his stomach drops. Oopsie. He witnesses his dad handing Wayne the keys, and he tells Kevin, Wayne will drive you to the mall. And also that he and Wayne had to talk about responsibility. Wayne turns to Kevin all sweetly like, you ready to go, Kev? And he asks, will 6:30 work for you? Wayne and Jack and Norma look convinced that Wayne has come around. Come on, are they really buying his shit? After picking up Paul, Wayne pulls the car over to the curb and tells them, well, here's $10. Why don't you guys hang out at Paul's house for 2 hours? I'd be like, fuck that. Wayne tells them he has to go and get Dolores, and he doesn't have time to take them all the way to the mall. Kevin tells him, I'm not leaving. And Wayne tells him, fine, we'll just sit here. I don't know how long they're there for, but the street lamps come on. Wayne turns to Kevin, once again screaming, Kevin, get out of the damn car! And Kevin refuses. Paul watches this exchange between the brothers, and then after Wayne gives him basically an ultimatum, get out of the car or die. Paul gets the hell out of there saying, I gotta take my sister to Kitty City. I don't know what that is. It sounds like a Toys R Us or something. Wayne and Kevin continue their back and forth, and finally, with an evil gleam in his eye, Wayne says, all right, you want to go to the mall? We'll go to the mall. And Kevin turns around his seat like, finally, damn. Kevin, come on. You have to know this is not going to end well. Wayne starts driving down the street erratically and laughing maniacally while Kevin tries to hold his fear in check. All this time, Wayne is driving, there's another car behind him. Well, for a little bit at first. Then Wayne's so distracted that Kevin has to yell, Wayne, watch out! Because he almost hit a guy who was working on his car that was parked on what looks like a cul-de-sac near a cornfield. What suburb do they live in that has a cornfield? Are they in Gatlin, Nebraska? Is Isaac and Malachi going to come out of the cornfield with machetes? Luckily, Wayne looks just in time to keep from hitting the guy and his car. Then he plows through a cornfield as Kevin screams while thoughts race through his mind, like the big house with the great big yard that he will probably never see again. When I was younger watching this flashed through my head when I was watching it. Like, when Kevin said that, I was thinking they were going to plow into someone's house as they were going through that cornfield. I thought they would wind up in someone's backyard when he was talking about that big house. Oops. The car finally stops and Kevin turns his boiling rage and anger on Wayne, screaming at him. I want to play this clip because we see Wayne all of a sudden, this near-death experience actually gives him some humanity. It humanizes him. If only for a second, it humanizes him. And we see a caring Wayne caring about the safety of his brother for a moment. I'll be right back.
Wayne! Wayne! You're crazy, you know that? You could have got us killed!
Are you okay?
It was the first time he had asked me that question in 13 years.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, he could have gotten them killed or killed that guy who was working on his car. But when we see Wayne, who's still in shock, turn to Kevin and ask, "Are you okay?" Kevin just looks at him unbelievingly. He heard those words... Unbelieving that he even heard those words come from his brother, because in all his 13 years, Wayne had never asked him that. He tells him, "Yeah, I'm okay." I'm just thinking, how are they going to get out of that cornfield? They drive home together in silence, but then, almost to break the tension, Kevin grins at Wayne, like, "Can you believe this just happened to us?" Like, the shock has worn off. Now it's just like, it's so unbelievable. Oh my gosh. They will have that story to tell for decades. When Wayne looks at Kevin and all that shock and fear of a few moments ago just washes away as he joins in, and it's a laugh riot. Like, laugh now, because you won't be laughing when your dad gets done with you. You all know that saying, "We'll laugh later when all this is over." Reminds me of the scene from the Blair Witch Project, when one of the characters says, "It doesn't matter, because one day we'll look back on this and laugh heartily." No, they did no laughing, they died. Now we're in the driveway as Jack takes stock of the damage done to his car, which is minimal, but he does find a corn stalk in the fender or in the front of the car or in the wheel well, I'm not sure. He asks the boys what happened, and they spin this yarn about how the tire blew and the spare was flat. The car did look a little wobbly as they drove it home. He asks how fast they were going, and Wayne says, 30? And Jack just looks at him, his face twisting in anger. "Actually, it was 35, Kevin tells him, and that's when Jack bends down, and that's when he pulls the corn stalk from the front end of the car and holds it up, like, "What the hell is this? Did you guys take a detour on some back road somewhere on the way to the mall?" Like I said, I'd say use Children of the Corn as an excuse, but unfortunately it hadn't come out yet. Kevin's walking down the street and tells us he hadn't been to the mall in 3 weeks since he hadn't felt like getting in a car. Well, yeah, if my life flashed before my eyes while almost being killed in a car, I really wouldn't want to be in one either. That's when Wayne pulls up alongside Kevin asking if he wants a lift, but Kevin declines. Wayne tells him to get in, acting all sincere, but as soon as Kevin reaches for the door handle, Wayne's at it again, pulling the car forward every time Kevin gets near. This keeps going on as the credits fade to black and the Beach Boys song "I Get Around" plays overhead. I'd be like, what's the point? Just continue walking home, Kevin. Why subject yourself to that? A little trivia, actually, Jason Hervey, who plays Wayne, said that his older brother, used to do that to him when he was young. So that's how he got the idea for that. Like, that's kind of clever. All right, guys, that's the end of that episode. So time for my Flower Power episode rating. I'm giving it 4 out of 5 Flower Power petals. 1, Wayne entering the world of driving and showing us all what not to do. 2, Kevin's stalker issues with this dream girl, following her to the movies. The fact that he knows what her hair smells like is just creepy. 3, a near-death experience brings Wayne and Kevin together, if only for a moment, and Wayne shows his human side. 4, for Jack and Norma laying down the law with Wayne and suspending his driving privileges. I knocked off 2 Flower Power petals. Actually, one, I'm sorry. For Wayne being a crazy driver and almost killing someone, having no regard for anyone's safety until he's faced with his own mortality. Wonderling words of wisdom. I feel this episode did a great job showcasing a teenager just getting their license and the air of freedom and independence that they feel. I know I felt that way, and I had my car taken away a few times by my dad just because I was always go, go, go all the time, according to my dad. And he figured if I didn't have a job, I didn't need a car. Plus, I spent most of my senior year riding the bus because I lost my driving privileges to school for skipping a lot during my junior year. Here's my quote for the episode. As we drove home in silence, we began to realize the absurdity of our situation. We were two people with almost nothing in common, thrown together by circumstance. The harder we struggled against that fact, the more tightly we were bound together. That night, the gap between 13 and 16 got a little smaller. I didn't make it back to the mall for several weeks. Somehow I just didn't feel like getting in a car. As for Wayne and me, we'd reached a new understanding. We didn't have to be friends or anything, but we'd always be brothers. All right, let's move on to Season 3, Episode 4, Mom Wars, which aired on October 31st, 1989, Halloween. Mom grows concerned about Kevin playing rough and touch football after school. Kevin has to make a choice. We open the episode with an old home movie montage of a little 3-year-old Kevin entering his parents' bedroom with his dad to surprise Norma on her birthday with a card. It's so cute. She picks him up and kisses him on the cheek. Then we see the family in the backyard grilling and Norma goofing off for the camera, but quickly she switches into mom mode when she sees young Wayne being too rough with little Kevin, and she swoops in and makes it all better. Adult Kevin narrates how it was nice to have her close by whenever he needed her, of course. That was when he was 5, but at 13, it could be stifling because she's always there, as we see her knocking on the bathroom door asking if he's all right. He said, "Mom, I'm in the bathroom," he tells her. "Well, all I can say is if he was masturbating in there, you ain't gonna get no privacy in the house, Kev." Kevin comes out of the bathroom with a towel around his neck. He tells us that, yeah, a mom's gotta be a mom, but a guy's gotta be a guy. And when an irresistible force meets an immovable object, sooner or later, something's gotta give. Yeah, I'm not a parent. You know, I can't speak on Norma's behalf, but having once been a teenager, I think that's when my dad and I started to not get along. I wanted more independence, and he wasn't exactly happy with that. Then we see the boys on the gridiron or Shepherd's Park playing football as Kevin, playing football, or bleh. Basically, Shepherd's Park is where the boys are playing. Kevin calls it no equipment football. He tells us he's been playing every afternoon after school since the cool weather set in. So, since the cool weather set in recently, or he's been doing this for the last week and Norma just has no idea and she's just fine with it, or what's going on here? Or is the first sign of blood that he gets that she takes notice and jumps on that, I guess. The kids are running and tackling each other, having a great time. This is the episode where we meet Dickhead, as I'm referring to him, Craig Hobson. I really don't like this guy. He's an asshole with no redeeming qualities whatsoever. We get evidence of this when he teases Paul for wearing too many sweatshirts. Actually, it's mainly a t-shirt, a sweatshirt, and a zip-up hoodie. In Paul's defense, it's gotta be late fall. He tells Hobson he needs them because the wind really cuts through you like a knife. Yeah, definitely. When it gets cold, and like when I go on my walks, I'll like go out and kind of test the air, like, oh, maybe I should go, you know, put on, you know, heavier pants or whatever, or sweatpants or whatever, or a jacket. So, although if he's running and tackling, etc., I would think he would probably get too warm having all that on. Many times I've misjudged the weather on my walks wearing heavy pants and a hoodie only to get overly warm and then embarrassed when I see other people walking around in either a sports bra and thin workout shirt or a thin workout shirt and thin jogger pants. Like, I probably overdid it. After the tackle, the kids hop up and brush off. Then they notice Doug Porter on the ground breathing heavily. A couple kids ask him if he's breathing and if he's okay. He looks like he just got the wind knocked out of him. No cracked ribs or a shattered pelvis or messed up vertebrae. He's all good. Doug sits up and tells them he's fine, much to Paul's disbelief, because from his expression, he was hoping that the injury would result in game over. So Kevin gets into a huddle and explains the next play to his teammates. They break and Kevin chucks the ball. Now we move to the kitchen later that night when Norma asks, "Is that blood on your shirt?" The shirt he's wearing is a long red-sleeved white shirt, one of those baseball-type shirts. Maybe he should have worn a dark shirt that wouldn't show stains, like maybe a black shirt or a blue shirt or a red shirt. Because the blood would, like, mix in with a red shirt and he could just say it's, like, whatever. He tells her, "Oh, no, it's ketchup from lunch at school." Karen comes in and notices right away, asking, "How'd you get that blood on your shirt?" Again, Kevin confirms, "It's not blood." Norma asks how he got ketchup on his shirt, and he tells her, "Oh, it's from fish sticks at lunch." Then she goes over, checks the school lunch menu on the fridge. Now, I don't remember having my own copy of the lunch menu to take home. I had to memorize it while I was in the lunch line. Usually chicken nugget day was always on Wednesday, until in high school when I think it moved to Thursday. Those were the, honestly, out of all the things they served at the school lunch, chicken nugget day was the best. I remember in elementary school, when on chicken nugget day, when we had those styrofoam trays, that if you got a sticker on the bottom of your tray, you got a prize. We were always told that we had to wait till after we finished our lunch, but we always looked, like, as soon as we sat down with our tray, we'd, like, try to lift it up a little to see if we would got a sticker or not. She tells him that day was actually, that was pizza day. Kevin then corrects himself, like, "Oh, yeah, did I say ketchup? I meant pizza sauce." Of course, who should come in and fuck everything up but Wayne when he mentions, "Oh, I heard Doug Porter got creamed at your football game that earlier." Okay, how in the hell does Wayne know this? Where is he getting his information from? He's got to have somebody. He's got to have somebody that knows. Norma looks at Kevin, "Football? Is that tackle football?" Then she starts really grilling him, which is funny because she's grilling hamburgers, asking who he's playing with. His response, "Oh, friends from school." "Where?" she asks. "Oh, at the school?" And he tells her, "No, at the park." Then she asks, "Well, do you guys have a coach?" And he asks innocently, "A coach?" She says, "Well, don't you think that something like that should be supervised?" You know, Norma, if Norma knew about all the professional football players getting concussions, and that's with equipment, or high school football players fucking up their back, possibly paralyzing themselves for life, she would definitely forbid him to play. Karen, of course, has to throw in her two cents, saying how football is totally barbaric. And Kevin tells Norma, "Look, you have nothing to worry about. Don't you trust me?" Or, "Trust me." Didn't he ask her to trust him in Season 2, Episode 1, Heart of Darkness, when he and Paul hung out in the woods with Gary? Look how well that turned out. She tells him, "Well, of course I trust you. I just don't want anyone getting injured." Kevin scoffs at this, like, "Psst." Turning serious again, like, "Injured." "Look, no one's going to get injured, okay?" Now we hear the young boys yelling as they slam into each other in the park during a scrimmage. After one boy, a kid on the bottom of the tackle pile, tries to walk it off after probably bruising some ribs, Paul points out to Kevin his mom's car driving past. Like, "Hey, is that your mom?" Kevin takes note of this, being his mom, he's like, well, no, she's never driven by the park before when he played. During science class the next day, again being taught by Mr. Cantwell, actor Ben Stein, provides commentary to the film strip playing, all about mothers in nature sacrificing their lives for their children. We see a salmon swimming upstream. Then we see a mountain lion carrying her cub in her mouth. And then we also see this big bird, like, sitting on its baby, which is already born, by the way. It's really cute. But it's like she's sitting down on it, laying on it, and then you see this little duck, fuzzy duck's head being squished and his eyeball, like, practically popping out of its head. It's like, no, you're squishing it. Broken neck. Paul brings up possible reasons for Kevin's mom to have been driving past the other day, and Kevin looks at him confused. I'm sure he's probably already moved on. Like, I really don't care. I've moved on. But of course, Paul has to dredge up the past and old worries. Paul only voices concern because he doesn't want Kevin's mom talking to his mom, because we've seen Ida Pfeiffer, and we all know that she probably worries more than Kevin's mom when it comes to her son. Kevin reassures him they're doing nothing wrong and we have nothing to worry about. However, surprise, surprise, who should show up at school but Norma, and she's there to take him shopping for pants. The guys ask him if he's coming with to the park for more football action, and Kevin tells them, well, hey, hold up, I'll only be a minute. The moment he reaches the passenger window, she tells him, hey, hop in. Well, I'm taking you shopping for new pants, since there's a sale over at Boys Town. I'd be like, what? Wait a minute. This is something that can be done on a weekend. Plus, I'm sure the sale will still be there on Saturday, unless it's one of those one-day-only sales. Everything's 75% off or something. He tells her he's going to take the bus because the guys are waiting. She levels him with a, I think you need new pants. If I were him, I'd be like, great, you know my measurements, go get me some. He tells her, I don't need new pants, the ones I have fit great, they're stylish, I just don't need new pants. But she's determined to get him new pants and take him shopping. So the next thing we see, Kevin trying on pairs of hideous pants. I mean, there are some blue jeans, but then we get weird rainbow color pants and one with stripes. I noticed Kevin actually switched to boxer shorts from the tidy whities from earlier in season 2. Yeah, I'm not a pervert. He goes out in these puke green pants, and she shakes her head no at him. She's doing this deliberately, giving him all these pairs of pants she knows that she's not going to like anyway, but having him try them on to kill. Like, she's basically killing time until it's time probably to start dinner. So she's doing this deliberately to keep him from playing football after school. He's probably tried on 10 pairs and a half of them. Half of them are gross. And she tells him, no, try these others on. I remember shopping for clothes with my grandma, and she had me come out of the dressing room with the clothes on, and she'd ask me what I thought. I usually reply, fine. You know, oh, yeah, they're okay. I mean, I'm not a big clothes shopping person. I'm really not into that too much. I sure was uncomfortable when I was trying on my first bras. I mean, yikes. Bra shopping, yikes. Kevin walks out of the dressing room wearing blue and white striped pants, and the store clerk doing the alterations asks him, well, how do they fit? Kevin says, fine, we'll take them. But Norma is concerned because it looks like they're a little roomy in the crotch area. Way to go and make a guy feel weird in public there, Norma. Well, maybe roomy is a good thing. That way when he gets all those teenage boy erections, it won't cut off the blood supply to his junk. Back in the car, Norma tells him, see, that wasn't so bad, was it? And Kevin fixes her with a death glare, like, you gotta be kidding me right now. Then she mentions how, oh, there's no time to run to Buster Brown's for shoes. You're going to have to have new shoes to go with those pants. She's like, well, we'll just have to go tomorrow. If I were Kevin, I'd be like, oh, hell no. Kevin tells her point blank, look, Mom, I have a football game tomorrow. She just smiles and tells him, we'll talk about that later. No, There is no later, only now. Let's just lay all the cards out on the table and have this out. All of a sudden, Norma slams on her brakes, not seeing the red light. And her arm shoots out across Kevin's chest to keep him from flying out the windshield, since I don't think they have seatbelts yet. Damn, two episodes in a row of someone in Kevin's family almost kills him in a car accident. She asks if he's okay, and he looks so agitated that he's about to pop a blood vessel as she caresses his head. Kevin decides to broach the subject of playing football with Jack. So he ambushes him as soon as he walks in the door from work. And Jack says, you know, I have no problem with you, you know, giving you permission to play. Like, yeah, it's fine, yeah. He's like, well, didn't you play as a kid and this, and you didn't use equipment and blah, blah, blah. And he's like, yeah, sure, you can play. So, of course, when he's taking his drink from Norma, she's like, you know, Jack, I don't think it's such a good idea. And he's like, you heard your mother. And he heads into the living room with his vodka or whatever. So Norma tells him, so I'll pick you up after school tomorrow to get those shoes. As she sets down a plate of cookies in front of him, he bites into one, clearly pissed. Like, oh, I'm so damn pissed. I can't even enjoy this cookie. It tastes like dirt. So the boys are in shop class, and Craig hops and comments on Kevin's new pants. Then leads into him, why weren't you at the game yesterday? And then mentions how Paul set a new record. Most dropped passes during a scrimmage. Kevin tells Craig, well, I couldn't make it because I had to help my dad change the spark plugs in the Impala. Paul tells him that they lost the game because Jimmy couldn't play because his mom was against it. Craig asks Kevin if you'll be there tonight, right? And Kevin tells him, yeah, I'll be there. Then Craig picks up a sliver of wood the shape of a toothpick, sticks it between his lips, and walks off. Like, oh, I'm so cool. No, you're not, Craig. So, Kevin's mom gave him strict orders to meet her in front of the school when it let out. But then Kevin figures, well, maybe I misheard. Maybe she meant to meet him in front of the house or at home after school. So, he goes home into the kitchen, calls out, hey, Mom. Mom, here? No? Okay. Well, I'm out. Then he changes into after-school clothes and adjusts his Jets jacket and takes off for the park. I noticed that he didn't lock the door to the house. How nice you could do that back then and all your stuff would still be there when you get home. Doesn't work like that nowadays. So Kevin and Craig are tossing a football back and forth when Paul comes up and Craig informs him, hey, you're late. Paul asks, well, you guys didn't start without me, did you? And Craig tells him, well, of course not. Wouldn't be a game without you. They're ribbing between guys. Then Kevin notices his mom drive up, and boy, is she not happy. Kevin jogs over to her as the boys mock him, like, oh, Kevin, your mom's here. Oh! She asks him, Kevin, what are you doing here? I told you to meet me out front of the school at 3 o'clock. He tells her, well, I'm sorry, I forgot. She's like, you forgot. Yeah, she's not buying that, Kevin. He tells her, I thought you meant for me to meet you in front of the house after school. She's all like, really? That's what you thought I said. She's not believing him at all. Her pink outfit, by the way, is very nice looking. Maybe a little too nice just for running errands and going shopping. But, I mean, she's in the house all the time. So it's like, when you go out, that's her only time to go out. It's like, she wants to look nice, you know? It's the only way she can look nice is when she goes out to buy groceries and stuff. She turns back to the car saying, well, we still have time to go to the store. But Kevin stands his ground, telling her, I'm not coming, Mom. I'm playing football. She tells him, well, I thought we decided you weren't going to play anymore. And he's like, I never said that. You decided that. What do you have against football anyway? I know that she wants to be, you know, protective of him. She still thinks of him as her little boy, but she needs to loosen the reins a little. Yes, he might get hurt, but that's the only way he's going to learn. She looks out onto the field, then mentions how Doug Porter shouldn't be playing football. He has bladder problems. Bladder problems? Seriously? Where did she hear that? Doug's mother? Who stands around and talks about their kids' bladder issues with other mothers? That's just weird. Alright, I'm going to play this clip of Kevin standing up to Norma and telling her to stop babying him, that he can take care of himself. So be right back.
I just worry about you, sweetheart.
Don't you have anything better to do, Mom? I mean, just baby me. I can take care of myself.
Well, if you're gonna go, go.
The look of hurt that passes over Norma's face when Kevin knocks her hand away after she tells him she worries about him when she reaches out to caress his head and he knocks her hand away. I think it's then that she realizes maybe she needs to let go and let Kevin make his own decisions. As much as she wants to hold on to protect him from everything, he is growing up. So she says, you know, if you're going to go, then go. She tells him, then turns away and sadly walks back to her car, then leaves. Kevin heads back into the fray, and he's having the time of his life, catching passes and scoring touchdowns. Craig Hobson calls a new game, as some boys mention, oh, it's getting late, and Paul complains of being cold, even though he has a zip-up hoodie over a sweatshirt. Kevin smiles, agreeing to a new game, as he tosses the ball to Craig Hobson. They break apart as Kevin takes his stance and catches the ball, running with it until he's hit by Craig Hobson, then pulled down to the ground by Randy Mitchell, and then a couple other kids pile on top of Kevin as he feels the weight of these boys pushing him farther and farther into the ground. Paul turns into a mother hen as he pulls the other guys off while Kevin struggles to catch his breath. Paul calls the game off on account of Kevin's palm is bleeding. Did he cut his palm on a rock on the ground? I don't think it would bleed just because people tackled him to the ground. It must be a heck of a hard playing surface. He's cutting his palm on dirt. Paul tells everyone to go home, and a couple kids leave on account of it being late and dinner time. Kevin's still on the ground telling the leaving kids, it's like, it's okay, guys, I'm all right, we can still play. And then he actually takes a look at his hand. As he walks home, he tells us that his hand started to burn like a 5-alarm fire. As soon as he walks in the door, Norma asks, are you hurt? His face is dirty, probably from having his face ground into the dirt by all the boys that were piled on top of him. He tells her, no, I'm fine. Even though she wanted to help him and make him feel better, she held back and told him where the medical kit was and the iodine so he could bandage himself up. We see him at the dining room table bandaging up his hand. I think he overdid it on the gauze, but what kid didn't do that when they were doctoring their own cuts? And he is doing it with one hand. Having finished, Kevin gets up from the dining room table and leaves. How funny, just like a kid, he doesn't bother to put the first aid kit away. He just leaves it there open on the dining room table. Then we close out the episode with a flashback montage of Norma and Kevin as she holds onto his hands while he's taking his first steps. Then she's cuddling with him on the couch as he's holding his little stuffed animal. And then we see her in the backyard with him throwing a football. Oh, she's throwing a football to him when he's 4 years old and Kevin's wearing a helmet. Then we see her and Kevin when Kevin is 7 years old and he's riding a bike on the sidewalk without training wheels for the first time because he's a little wobbly as he's going down. And she's just cheering, like, yay, just keep going, you're doing good. And then it basically fades to black. I love these cute flashbacks between them. It shows how close they were when he was a little boy. But now that he's getting older and pulling away from her to gain more independence. I just think it's really cute. All right, that's the end of the episode. Time for my Flower Power episode rating. I'm giving this episode 3 out of 5 Flower Power petals. 1, for the flashbacks opening the episode with Norma and Kevin revealing their closeness and happy times. Number 2, the song that plays at the end, The Circle Game by Joni Mitchell during the flashbacks of young Norma and Kevin. The song really speaks to children being young and innocent, and then progressing with age and pulling away from their parents as they gain independence when they get older. 3. The moment Kevin comes unhinged and tells his mother to stop treating him like a baby and that he can take care of himself. That look of hurt on Norma's face broke my heart. But at least he was being honest with her and he stood his ground. She needs to cut the apron strings. I know he's her last baby, but she has to learn to let go. And number 4. Oops, hold on. Actually, that was just... Basically, I'm sorry, I'm giving it a 4 out of 5. Number 4 is for Paul looking out for Kevin and calling off a game, turning into Norma 2.0 when Kevin gets hurt. What a great friend. And here's my Wonderling words of wisdom. What I got from this episode is, cherish the times that you have with your parents and lean on their guidance. There will come a time when they will no longer be here, and you'll find yourself asking, what would mom/dad tell me to do in this situation? My quote of the episode, narrator, when you're a little boy, you don't have to go very far to find the center of your universe, mom. She's always there. It's a pretty good arrangement when you're 5. But around age 13, there starts to be a problem. The problem is, she's always there. And I mean always. Now, a mom has to be a mom, but a guy's gotta be a guy. And when an irresistible force meets an immovable object, sooner or later, something's gotta give. All right, let's say hey to some new Wonderling listeners that have been listening since early September. We have Rhode Island, Pennsylvania, Maryland, Japan, California, Florida, Mexico, Texas, New York, California, United Kingdom, New York, Michigan, United Kingdom, Texas, West Virginia, Arizona, California, France, New Mexico, Florida, Kansas, Texas, Belgium, Poland, and the United Kingdom, Australia, North Mariana Islands, Tennessee, Washington, Philippines, Indonesia, India, Australia, North Carolina, Malaysia, New York, Pennsylvania, Wyoming, and Tennessee. Also, United Arab Emirates, I'm not sure what that is, Norway, Malaysia again, New Jersey, Ohio, Japan, Tennessee, Nigeria, California, United Kingdom. Here's some top listeners from SoundCloud. Pointless View, Tiffany Hodges, Kaneko Murioko, oh my gosh, I butchered this name, I'm so sorry, Mira Oka, Josh David, and Kai Viwa. All right, join me Sunday, October 15th. This podcast is going to be every 2 weeks with 2 episodes. When I discuss Season 3, Episode 5, On the Spot, which aired on November 7th, 1989. In this episode, Kevin joins the school play just to get out of gym class, while Winnie and Paul seem to take it very seriously. Winnie has problems with her performance, and Kevin unexpectedly helps her during the show. And Season 3, Episode 6, Odd Man Out, which aired on November 14th, 1989. In this episode, when Kevin and Paul have a disagreement, they decide to seek out new best friends. Kevin starts hanging around Doug Porter, while Paul befriends Brady Ryland. Here are the listener questions that I will post in the description, and also you can find them on the Facebook Wonder Years podcast page and the Instagram one, as well as Twitter. Did you ever have stage fright? This is for Season 3, Episode 5, On the Spot. Did you ever have stage fright when you were in a play and forgot your lines? The other question, if you were Winnie, how would you have handled this situation? And for Season 3, Episode 6, Odd Man Out, do you ever have a falling out with a friend and use a new friend to make your other friend jealous? And the second question, did you feel bad for Doug for how Kevin was treating him? You can email me your comments at lbomwonderyearspodcast@gmail.com. I'd like to thank you listeners out there. Thank you so much for listening. I want to give a sincere thank you to all. Whether you're listening to this podcast on iTunes or SoundCloud or any other listening platforms that you may use to hear this podcast, I love giving you guys the episode recaps of the Wonder Years, joining me as they go into full detail as we reminisce of days gone by with Kevin and his friends Paul and Winnie and the rest of the Arnold family, as well as giving my occasional running commentary and childhood stories. To stay connected to the podcast, you can visit my many social media sites. Facebook page, Looking Back on My Wonder Years and Wonder Years Podcast. Instagram, LBOM Wonder Years Podcast. And Twitter, Wonder Years Pod. So, with that being said, I know you all know that, as of today, The Wonder Years is no longer on Netflix. I went out and got through Amazon the complete series on DVD, so I'm all set. You guys don't have to worry about me not being able to do the podcast anymore. So, every 2 weeks, I don't know what the heck that was. Oh, Siri's talking to me. Hold on. Let me put a halt to that. Sorry about that. I don't know how Siri started up. I just have my phone over there charging, and all of a sudden I heard his British voice. I'm like, what is going on? Siri, I did not call for you. So, all right, October 15th, Sunday, set your watches. We will be back for a new podcast episode with two new episodes. And continuing on with season 3. Also, look forward in November around Thanksgiving. I will be doing the Thanksgiving episode, The Ties That Bind. That will be right around Thanksgiving, so you guys can enjoy that on your drive, or if you're going out to see family, you can play that, take it with you, whatever you do. So I'll see you then on October 15th. Have a great 2 weeks. Enjoy the weather. It's starting to turn. Slowly but surely. Bye-bye. Thank you.